This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, a look back at the top stories of 2020 and a preview of 2021. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. From the all-consuming coronavirus pandemic to U.S. elections, there was no shortage of game-changing events over the past year. On January 3rd, 2020, before the word COVID-19 became a household name, Iranian General Qasem Soleimani was killed in a targeted U.S. drone strike in Baghdad, a controversial action approved by U.S. President Donald Trump. Just 2 weeks later, the impeachment trial of President Trump began in the U.S. Senate, and on February 5th, it concluded with his acquittal. By then, news of the novel coronavirus engulfed the globe, wreaking havoc in Wuhan, China, where the virus was first detected, and thereafter in Western Europe, especially in Italy. Despite having imposed a temporary travel ban against China and most Western European countries, the United States quickly became the epicenter of the pandemic. President Trump played down the severity of the pandemic from its inception and rejected calls to liberally invoke the Defense Production Act, which would have centralized manufacturing of crucial personal protective equipment, or PPE, and ventilators. According to recent statistics from the Johns Hopkins University, by year's end, SARS-CoV-2 had infected more than 81 million people and more than 1,785,000 people had died from COVID-19. The fact that at least 337,000 deaths occurred in the United States alone, the country theoretically most equipped to deal with a crisis of this magnitude, alarmed many. On the positive side, international vaccine development, supported by the Trump administration's vaccine program, Operation Warp Speed, raced ahead. By early December, several vaccines against COVID-19 were approved, and inoculations for essential healthcare workers and the most vulnerable individuals began apace. After the coronavirus pandemic and its devastating effect on the economy, the U.S. presidential and congressional elections in early November stand out, perhaps, as the second most consequential event of 2020, and not just for Americans. President Trump's America First foreign policy and anti-immigration measures affected allies and adversaries around the globe. Many analysts argue that President Trump politicized the pandemic by saying it would disappear on its own. He and other administration officials downplayed the use of face masks, which were simple but effective tools to fight transmission. Except in the early days of the pandemic, Mr. Trump opposed shutting down parts of the economy and schools, temporary measures designed to stem the spread of the virus. He clearly knew that the pandemic's deleterious effect on the economy would cast a shadow over his reelection prospects. Except for the stock market, analysts say the U.S. economy suffered its biggest slump since the Second World War. In the end, American voters chose Democratic candidate Joe Biden to be the next president. In spite of Biden's solid win of 306 electoral votes, President Trump continues to allege, without evidence, that widespread voter fraud marred the election and refuses to concede. In between the coronavirus pandemic and the U.S. elections, the death of African-American George Floyd at the hands of white Minneapolis police officers galvanized unprecedented nationwide protests against police brutality. And in September, less than 2 months before the election, legendary liberal Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, leaving a critical vacancy which would determine the ideological direction of the court for decades to come. In a bid to solidify a conservative majority, Mr. Trump immediately nominated Judge Amy Coney Barrett, a staunch conservative whom the Senate narrowly confirmed as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court in late October. For more on the major domestic and international stories that dominated the 2020 headlines and promised to reverberate in 2021, we turn to two top-notch reporters. Linda Feldman is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Emily Tamkin is U.S. editor of The New Statesman. That's a progressive political and cultural magazine in the U.K. She's also the author of the recently published book, The Influence of Soros, Politics, Power, and the Struggle for an Open Society. And you will recognize their names and voices from our sister program, Issues in the News, our roundup of the week's top stories. Both ladies join me via Skype. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Carol.
Thank you for having us.
Linda Feldman, let me start with you. Look, I selected a few issues. Feel free to add, subtract, amplify, however you see fit, the big stories in 2020 and going forward in 2021.
It was, to state the obvious, a year like no other, beginning with impeachment, which feels like ancient history. And I was in reviewing the events of the year to prepare for this show. I was recalling the impeachment and thinking, well, certainly this will have an impact on the election in November. It was indeed a historic event. Donald Trump was only the third American president to be impeached, and it turned out to be utterly inconsequential. It was trumped by the virus, and obviously the virus is still with us and has had a profound effect on everything in our lives, from how we work, from how we socialize or not, to how we engage in politics. But the point that I want to make is that I think in some ways it was the year of the woman. In everything that happened, there was a strong female component. Let's go to first to New Zealand. You had Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who is lauded internationally for her handling of the pandemic. Of course, she governs an island or a collection of islands, which is much easier than governing a country that has a lot of land borders. But still, she was level-headed and smart and told people what they needed to do, and they did it. People respected her and listened to her. I would also point, as you mentioned, Carol, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's passing, followed by the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett, certainly the most conservative female justice on the court. We saw the election of the first female vice president in this country, who is both African-American and of South Asian descent. We saw the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, which brought a fresh spotlight to the role of women in politics, not just voting, but in serving in prominent political positions. And on the Republican side, we saw a record number of women elected to Congress, which is good news for the Republican Party. No matter your politics, you want, I think, broad representation in terms of demographics in both parties. You want a lot of female Republicans. Women have a special bond, even if they disagree in their politics. We have found in the past that, say, the women in the Senate have been able to solve problems where the men haven't been able to. And then I'll end my pan to women on an all-female show with the presumed elected president of Belarus, a woman named Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya, whose husband was the main opposition leader in Belarus, but he was imprisoned, as the dictator Lukashenko is wont to do. And she's in exile in Lithuania, but has discovered her power as a voice of democracy and is standing firm, recognized as the duly elected president of Belarus by the United States, other Western countries. And we don't know which way that story will go, but it's encouraging to see a woman in the lead there, a woman finding her voice, finding her power, and perhaps leading another country into a more democratic future.
Linda, thank you so much for that terrific summary and theme of the year of the woman. It reminds me of my interview with now outgoing chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee, Nita Lowey, who was praising her counterpart, Kay Granger from Texas. So I think you're right in terms of women, independent of their political affiliation, they seem to find common ground on many issues. So over to you, Emily Tamkin, for your take on the big stories of 2020 and themes.
I have to say that when last year began, I, like many people, I think, but I really did not see the way in which it was going to play out. I didn't realize that this virus that we were hearing about in Wuhan was going to become the story of the year. And in fact, in January, I thought that the killing of Soleimani by the United States that you mentioned at the beginning of this program, that that would really dominate the year. Obviously, it did not. The pandemic did. When I think about the kind of unifying themes of this year, the one that I keep coming back to is nationalism. Certainly, we saw a lot of it, or different manifestations of it here in the United States. I think that in particular, the Trump campaign played on these themes of what it is to be American and what it does not mean to be American. And a story that I think is a big one for international news that I'll mention just because it hasn't brought up yet is that in India, you also saw this embrace by the government of a nationalism, a Hindu nationalism or Hinduvata, and the attempt to create an India, and at times violent attempt to create an India for Hindus and explicitly not for Muslims, which we saw both in adopted policies and, you know, in violence in the streets of Delhi in particular back in February. I think that, you know, it's not just Trump and Modi. Many leaders played on this, from Bolsonaro in Brazil to Viktor Orban in Hungary. And I think that as we head into this year, although I hesitate to make any predictions, given, again, how wrong I was about 2020, I do think that that's something that we will see world leaders and their populations continue to grapple with in 2021.
Back to you, Linda Feldman, before we go to a break. Let's talk about any type of positive trends. Certainly the Year of the Woman, as you said, all of that is quite positive, I think. But in terms of the word heroes, for example, you know, we talk about the frontline workers vis-a-vis the pandemic, whether nurses, doctors, or essential workers. And then the other thing that comes to my mind is during the elections, we saw the states really come to the fore to defend their election machinery in the face of many allegations of fraud. So we're seeing, you know, states, even with Republican governors and Republican state legislatures, defending their turf. How do you see that?
So I agree with you completely. It's been an extraordinary year, a year of testing for democracy. The United States likes to see itself as a beacon on a hill to the rest of the world. But there have been times this year when it's been kind of embarrassing to be an American, to watch the antics of some politicians. But as you suggest, we've had many heroes, the election workers, the judges, the elected officials, including Republicans, who have stood up for what they believe is right and not necessarily what certain political actors are demanding of them. I mean, we're continuing to see in the state of Georgia, where there will be a very crucial Senate election, which will determine control of the U.S. Senate, which, of course, is extremely important. Heroism continues in Georgia, where you have people who worked hard to register voters and election workers who are standing up to demands by the president, claims of fraud ongoing in this very important election coming. Another positive event that I would point to for this year is the very, very quick creation of vaccines that have proven to be effective in trials. The experts were telling us that we wouldn't have vaccines until early in 2021 at the soonest, and yet already people are being vaccinated. Now, there's bad news attached to the good news, which is that the vaccines are being distributed and used much slower than is needed. To reach herd immunity, the vaccines need to be put in effect much faster. But I think once Joe Biden takes office on January 20th, then I think we'll see a more robust structure in place to make that happen faster.
Emily Tamkin, Linda Feldman talked about it was a year of democracy testing. And you alluded to that insofar as you talked about the theme of nationalism that we saw on the rise, not just here in the United States, but in India and in Brazil. But do you see any silver linings or bright spots with respect to that very theme, or other bright spots you'd like to point to?
Absolutely, with respect to that very theme. I think that what we saw this year is that people really do cherish the right to participate in the democratic process. I think that Linda mentioned Belarus at the beginning. The fact that people in Belarus still went out, have lived under Lukashenko for all of these years, the so-called last dictator of Europe for all these years, and still went out and voted and still went out and protested. The fact that here in the United States, you had the president casting doubt on the legitimacy of the democratic process, and still in a pandemic, people broke turnout. I think the fact that people still care enough about democracy in order to go out and vote, to me, that's a positive thing.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. Our guests are Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Emily Tamkin, U.S. Editor of The New Statesman. And they join me via Skype. We're discussing the top stories of 2020. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal Facebook fan, Fudemoto Yoshiyuko from Osaka, Japan. As always, if you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, speaking of Japan, of course, Shinzo Abe resigned after 8 years in office, which again is an extraordinary record for Japan. So that was another big story in 2020. Over to you again, Linda Feldman. Talk about the significance of the protests And how they, that is, the protests against excessive police violence, and how that also reverberated around the world from Brazil to Colombia to South Africa to Europe.
The protests in the United States, which were sparked by the killing of George Floyd, are, by the estimation of news outlets like the New York Times, the biggest mass demonstration in U.S. history. Millions and millions of people turned out into the streets to protest that killing. And as you said, it did reverberate around the world. We've had in this country a problem with police violence against people of all colors, but disproportionately against people of color for a long time. And there are many cases we can point to. Eric Garner, the guy who was choked and strangled and couldn't breathe, and, you know, "I can't breathe" became a slogan. But that, for some reason, didn't spark the kind of outpouring of unhappiness that we saw this time. Sadly, it also sparked violence, looting, wanton destruction of property, which some people think is justified. I would submit that violence and destruction of property is never a good thing. History has shown that that does not win over support. Longtime Black activists say that the way to really make progress is to, yes, protest in the streets peacefully, as Martin Luther King proposed, and then take it into the legislatures, take it to court, go through the process. Don't just form a mob and act in a way that only sparks a backlash. So what we've seen at the end of the year, we've seen the rise of something called the Proud Boys, which is right-wing reactionary men who go into the streets and beat people and are very aggressive supporters of Donald Trump. And, you know, I think in 2021, we'll be looking toward where that dynamic goes. Do we have the continuing back and forth of demonstrations in favor of racial justice and then the counter protests, or do we move into a more legislative and judicial remedy for essentially what is the original sin of this country, which is slavery?
Emily Tamkin, I'd like to get your take on that very issue.
I think that what America saw this year, and it's for a variety of reasons. It's because the murder of George Floyd was caught on tape. It's because we were in a pandemic and so not going about our lives in the way that we normally are. But what America saw is what many Black Americans have been trying to communicate to the rest of America for a long time, which is that there is state-backed violence and police brutality specifically against Black Americans, and that people are tired of it. They're tired of not knowing whether or not their sons and daughters are going to be able to safely come home from running an errand, and their friends and their family, and having to worry about this as a regular course of American life. I would make two points. One, I think that in addition to sustained protests in 2021, something that we will see is the continued debate over what exactly to do about this. You know, in the Democratic Party, there was a debate after the elections as to whether or not the call to defund the police is an effective one. On the one hand, you have people saying, well, this is scaring our voters away. And on the other hand, you have people saying, well, reform isn't working, and this is something that we need to consider and embrace. So I think that conversation, that debate, is one to continue watching throughout the year, because I don't think that it's something that's going away. People can't unsee what we saw this year. And I would also just note that the protests were widespread in the United States, but they took off around the world, which, and I'm stealing this from something that my colleague said, because people protested in Britain as well. And my colleague made the point that, one, this shows that for all of the truly embarrassing things about this country that I might wish were different, that America still has this political and cultural influence. But the other interesting thing is that the protests adapted for these different places in the world. So obviously in America, the Black Lives Matter movement and protests come out of the American system and the American tradition. In Britain, they meant something else. The protests in Nigeria against police brutality there, obviously they took on a different meaning. And I think the ways in which this conversation continues to not just spread around the world, but take root in different countries in ways that are specific to those places is something that I think that we'll be discussing here at VOA in 2021.
No question about it. And as we close, I thought we could close with an international look. I'd like to start with the Abraham Accords, brokered by the Trump administration. That is the normalization of relations between the UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and then Morocco with the state of Israel. Now, it's quite an extraordinary development, even if each of those states, you know, received major concessions in return for the pledge. And the fact that there was little to no linkage to resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which I guess calls into question the 2002 Saudi peace initiative. But I think that's going to be a story that will continue, of course, in 2021 and has some very positive aspects. Linda Feldman, what would you like to talk about with respect to any international developments aside from the Belarus protest story in 2020?
So in assessing 2020, one of the things I've been thinking about is things that Donald Trump maybe got right. There's a tendency among critics of Donald Trump to tar everything he did as wrong, bumbling, incompetent. The Abraham Accords is one where there are critics of the president who said that despite its flaws, despite the fact that it does nothing for the Palestinians, the deal was significant and redemptive. And I'm quoting Aaron David Miller, who was a senior diplomatic advisor in both Republican and Democratic administrations. So he says they deserve credit, even though they jumped on a bus that had already left the station. So my hope is that even though the deal did nothing for the Palestinians, that at least move the situation off the dime, and that this is something that the Biden team can pick up and maybe move forward. Another part of the world that everyone's focused on is China. Donald Trump recognized that how China operates is wrong and that they needed to be called on that, i.e. stealing intellectual property. And so I think for the Biden team, this is something that they will continue with and will recognize. I think the hope is that the Biden team recognizes that not everything Donald Trump did was bad, even though they were harshly critical of his behavior in both domestic and foreign policy. There are ways in which Donald Trump and his team's fresh eye to world challenges was useful in some ways, and that we can't just say everything Donald Trump did was bad.
Emily Tamkin, you get the last word, and not to put a damper on the very positive message by Linda Feldman. We did end the year with a major hacking, espionage attack by the Russians on the U.S. government. So that's another task that the Biden administration will have to deal with. It's going to have major ramifications. But what would you say, what would you add to what we talked about with respect to going forward and stories that you'd like to highlight?
I actually wrote a piece about the hack this past week and about how the Trump administration was bookended by allegations of Russian electoral interference and Russian hacking. And one of the paradoxes of Trump's term is that even though he himself espoused pro-Putin rhetoric, actually, relations between the U.S. and Russia were not good and arguably deteriorated. And one of the challenges that I think the Biden administration will have is, first of all, it will have 15 days when Biden is sworn in to extend New START. But one of the challenges that I think that they will have with Russia are, one, sending a clear message about what Russian behaviors they would like to see changed, which I think with all the sanctions that we have for all of the different reasons that we have them on Russia right now is perhaps getting muddled. And two, can the United States and Russia find areas on which to communicate and cooperate? And if not, what does that mean? So now that we've done a quick hit on Trump and Biden in Russia, I would also like to mention the European Union. The EU and Britain finally reached a Brexit trade deal. British lawmakers have approved it. We won't know until later this month whether the EU Parliament approves it, although I think it's likely. That doesn't mean that the story is, you know, that the story is over. We'll see over the rest of 2021 how British EU relations go with this new trade deal. The other thing I would note is that Hungary and Poland gave the EU a very hard time this year over the rule of law and the role that they think that monitoring rule of law and having common standards of rule of law in the EU for EU member states should play in, you know, in handing out money in the way that EU business is done. And I don't think that one's going away either. I somehow don't think that in 2021, Viktor Orban is going to completely change his tune on sovereignty versus the European Union and on rule of law. So I will be following that one as well in the year to come.
On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this Top Stories edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Emily Tamkin, U.S. editor of The New Statesman. Ladies, thanks for a terrific conversation, and thanks for your collaboration all year long. I wish you and our entire global audience a healthy and peaceful new year. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.